recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty.
All right, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig, Corey LaBounty, and Ian Blair with you on this, chilly Monday night. I don't know why I feel the need to give the weather every Monday night. Maybe it's from being on the morning show every morning. Where,
it is.
Believe it or not, to be on a morning show, all you have to do is talk about the weather for 90% and then throw a little couple headlines out there, and then you're good to go. But it is sports night, and plenty of sports to talk about tonight. And, well, heck, I don't even know, because I've been gone for pretty much the entire month of December. I want to thank you, Corey, and I want to thank you, Ian, for the awesome work you've done here over the not that you even need my thanks, because you guys are great sports broadcasters on your own, but from the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for filling in for me. Had a crazy December, really, because just like the CDC warned me about, have Thanksgiving with family, and the family comes down with this disease that everyone's talking about, COVID-19, and even though it didn't hit me hard, and thankfully didn't hit anyone in my family particularly hard, you still have rules to go by. So I was out of here for 2 weeks, basically, for the COVID quarantine, and then I think I was back in for 1 week, and I give you a call, Corey, and say, hey, the baby is out early. It looks like we are having our second child much earlier than planned. And my wife, she was in the hospital for a little while with that, so I missed one Monday night. And then the baby was born right at about 34 weeks. Peyton Amelia Erwig, a healthy little girl. Mama's healthy, and I'm healthy, but no one asks whether dad is healthy after sleeping on a hospital bed for 2 weeks. But everything is great in the Erwig household and back and ready for 2021. So I want to thank you and Ian for taking the reins there for a few weeks and letting you know it's going to be tough to get rid of me for a while now.
Our pleasure, Dalton. And it was just for a great reason. Just so happy that you had a healthy baby girl and everybody's doing well.
Yeah, and that's the main thing that I wanted to get across, is that everybody is doing well. And, you know, I'm reminded, and we've got some March Madness news we'll talk about here later in the hour, but, you know, a lot of guys talk about a certain surgery that some men get at some point in their lives if they're maybe tired of having children, and when to schedule that surgery, a vasectomy, because normally I don't even know what the standard is for how many days you're out after getting a vasectomy anymore, but I know so many men have always planned that around March Madness, and having been in the hospital for 2 weeks, there really isn't a better time to be in front of a TV with not much else to do than during bowl season in college football's, you know, bowl season. And this year, unfortunately, wasn't as good as so many years in the past, and this has been nothing like the bowl season we're used to, but still so many NFL games, college games, NBA games, soon to be NHL games to get to, that we're really kind of in a sports paradise right now when it comes down to it.
And you and I, looking back in April and May, and anybody who does any type of sports talk, know that that time we were searching for content.
Yeah.
And it was hard to come up with content because we knew that there was no transactions that were taking place. You were just basically getting information about what players were doing from a self-help standpoint. But you're absolutely right, Dalton. Right now our cup runneth over, and we're so happy to be with you on Monday nights talking plenty of whatever you would like to talk about. 251-343-0106 is how you can reach out to us.
Feel free to give us a call or a text, and we'll try to grab those calls and get you on the air, and we'll certainly look at your text tonight. But let's talk about these bowl games that have been played. Only one remaining, but 25 bowl games played so far this year. That's much, much less than the 45 or 46 that we're used to seeing. And I went back and checked it out because it really seems like there haven't been many good games that come down to the final quarter, much less the final possession. But only 7 of those 25 bowl games that have been played so far have been decided by fewer than 10 points. So it's not just, you know, my brain that made this up. There have been a lot of blowouts this year, and I think I'm blaming it on the COVID, just like so many other things. I think players are tired from this season. Not just, you know, I think they are physically and mentally worn down from the strain of this season and doing their best to stay away from other players and people and do everything they can to make sure that they aren't COVID positive so they can continue to play out there on the field. And you know that the coaches are tired having to keep up with this whole thing. So my theory is that has led to less than inspired play in the bowl season. Sometimes you'll get one team that's fired up and ready to go, and you get another team that was dealing with COVID issues all throughout the week leading into that game. But for one reason or another, the bowl games just have not been as good this year. And two of the blowouts just happened to come in Friday's CFP semifinal game. So let's start with that Alabama game and the I'll call it a blowout win over Notre Dame, even though a late touchdown helped Notre Dame cover the number that Vegas put out there. But basically, it was this thing I felt was over after the first two drives for both teams. I mean, Notre Dame wins the toss and received, which I thought was a smart move because Bama, if they won the toss, they were going to go down the field and score, and then you're starting from behind immediately. But Notre Dame wins the toss, took the ball first, went nowhere on that first drive. Bama scores seven plays later on a Mac Jones to Devontae Smith touchdown pass. And then at that point, I knew Notre Dame was in trouble. After that, another Notre Dame drive goes nowhere. And then Bama goes 97 yards to go up 14-0, and the route was basically on from there. Three touchdowns and a punt, and Bama's four first-half drives, and then they weren't much worse in the second half. A touchdown, a field goal, and two punts. And for me, Corey, Ian, that just looked like an efficient offense and a defense taking care of business in a game that really the Irish had no chance to win that unless they scored every drive and forced a turnover or two from the Bama offense.
It's the thing about Alabama that has really transformed, going from every time that Alabama has the punt, I get mad because you feel with the offensive firepower that Alabama has showed the entire country, you know they're going to score on every possession, if nothing else, a field goal, because Alabama actually has a field goal kicker.
Mm-hmm.
So points are going to go on the board, I feel, every time Alabama touches the ball. But when Notre Dame went down 14-0, I really thought the route was on. I think Alabama got caught glancing at the scoreboard and allowed Notre Dame to sustain a drive that allowed them to get back on the board and score the 7 points. But when you were late in the game and you knew the game was 31-7, the late touchdown, the late onside kick that they received, it just gives Alabama more fire to say, hey, we want to finish the season at 13-0, and the only way we can do that is to play for a full four quarters.
Yeah, and they, like you said, maybe a little bit of scoreboard watching. I also think you can't take everything away from Notre Dame. It's not like that was, you know, Mississippi State lining up against Alabama. Still, you have a professional coach there in Kelly who can get it done against the teams that he's usually supposed to get it done against. But I'm feeling more and more like college football nowadays, as we see, and we'll talk about this more later in the hour, as we see coaches move from, you know, you watch Sarkisian go to Texas, or we saw Malzahn come to Auburn and go back. You see Harsin coming into Auburn now. It seems to me like all these other teams can make all these different changes in coaching. But really, from the recruiting and the development of players, it's almost like you have your Amazon and Google and Apple sitting right there at the top of the business world. In this case, it's Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State in the college football world. And then everyone else are those companies that kind of just eat off of Apple and Google and Amazon's stock while they continue to grow and grow and grow. I feel more and more and more like you just – even 10 years from now, I don't know if we'll be looking at very different national championship games. You'll still have Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson in the mix just because that's how they've built these teams over the years.
Tradition, the Blue Bloods are going to run hard. But I'll tell you, I'll be the first to admit to the listening audience, I did not think that Ohio State belonged in the Final Four.
You said that.
I did not think that Ohio State would beat Clemson and take them to the woodshed the way they did. In the first quarter of action, it was 14-14. I knew we were going to have a great game. But the way that Ohio State dominated the second quarter and the lack of adjustments that the Clemson secondary made and the struggles defensively that Clemson had, I did not see that coming. Now, has Ohio State and did they play their best game of the year? Absolutely they did, Dalton.
Yeah.
And they had to at this point in time. You want to save your best for last. But when I sit here and I look at Ohio State being at 7-0, and I sit and I look at Alabama's record being 12-0, knowing that Alabama's played five more games against a conference that's much tougher than the Big Ten, I just really struggle, and I know a lot of national media and talking heads, they're trying to figure out what Ohio State team is it that we're going to see next Monday night.
Yeah, can they string two good games together? But can you honestly say that they're not one of the top three teams in the country right now? I mean,
after that,
I know why people said they didn't want Ohio State in the college football final, but if you want the best teams to play for the national championship, then looking back after that win over Clemson, that would have been an awful move to keep them out of the college football playoff, because in my mind, they are without a doubt now one of the top two teams in the nation. Maybe after Monday night, we might be saying that Ohio State is the best team in the nation. Let's break down that Clemson and Ohio State game a little bit more when we get back, and also the other SEC bowl games. What is happening with Mike Leach and Mississippi State? Man, the storylines, they just go on and on. All right, we're coming back. More Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 in just a couple minutes.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Erwig and Corey LaBounty with you. Ian Blair on the board right now. And give us a call, 251-343-0106. You can call or text that number, and we'll talk to you on the air. So we talked a little bit about that Alabama win over Notre Dame. That was expected. And honestly, I wouldn't have been surprised if you said there was a blowout in the other game as well. But then if you'd tell me that it was Ohio State who blew out Clemson, to me, that is a little bit surprising, Corey. And I've got to be honest, I wasn't on the air necessarily last week to say this, but I had a feeling that Clemson would be in a tighter predicament than most predicted once news came out that the offensive coordinator, Tony Elliott, would miss the game after testing positive for COVID-19. Still didn't expect this to be a blowout win for Ohio State, but I did feel that that gave them a little bit of a better shot to beat Clemson than if Elliott was there calling the plays. And I know I was talking with someone about it, and they said, well, you've got Trevor Lawrence there at quarterback, and he knows all the plays, and he could basically – they were making the argument that Trevor Lawrence could be the offensive coordinator and quarterback at the same time, like he's a Peyton Manning or a Drew Brees out there with a couple decades under his belt. But that obviously wasn't the case, and I think this is a game that Ohio State – really wanted. I mean, of course they wanted it, but after losing to Clemson in last year's semifinal the way that they did, and after Dabo Swinney for some reason gave the Buckeyes all the bulletin board material they needed by voting them 11th in the coaches poll, this is a game that clearly Ohio State wanted more than Clemson, and they had the horses on the field to back it up. Justin Fields, 6 touchdown passes, looked outstanding, certainly the best game he's had in that uniform. The question now is, can he put two of those together? But before we talk about the Alabama-Ohio State game, I want to get some more of your thoughts on that Ohio State blowout win over Trevor Lawrence and the Tigers.
Again, 14-14 at the end of the first quarter. I said this is going to be one of those games that we're going to watch for all four quarters, like it was 1 year ago, coming down to the last possession where Ohio State's Fields throws the interception to Clemson, and Clemson goes ahead and solidifies the win. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that it's going to go into the fourth quarter with a tight score, and that second quarter absolutely doomed Clemson. The adjustments again in the secondary were not there, Dalton, and Etienne had to be able to rush the football, to me, for over 100 yards for them to be successful. Ohio State's defense did a great job of holding and limiting him. Trevor Lawrence wasn't able to rush the ball effectively like he was 1 year ago. So Ohio State definitely, to me, did I think they were ranked 11? No. Did I think they were playing like a number two team in the country? Absolutely not. Or their seed being what it was at 3, I didn't even think they were a 3 seed.
But you thought, Dalton, they should have been a 4 or not even in it.
I felt that they should not even have been in it.
Right.
Just because of the number of games that they had played. But again, that's why you play the game. That's why everybody loves March Madness, like you talked about earlier, because a 1 seed can beat a 16 seed at any given time. And Ohio State, we are going to see what they're made out of. And I'm looking forward to it. But congratulations to the Buckeyes.
Yeah, and I think as well as the Ohio State offense played on Friday, this, to me, this could have easily been a 49-49 game there at the very, very end of the game. But that Ohio State front seven on defense is just so much more improved from where they were just a couple years ago. That front seven is a really – really tough part of the defense for any coach to navigate. From the post-game recap, this is from Cleveland.com. They wrote about the game. They said Clemson managed a paltry 44 yards on its 22 rushing attempts. So they were averaging 2 yards per carry with a running back that was in the Heisman watch list at the beginning of the year, Travis Etienne. So 44 yards on 22 carries. Buckeyes sacked Trevor Lawrence twice, but kept pressuring him, and half of the team's 6 pass breakups came from the defensive line. So I think those two things, not having Tony Elliott on offense to help Clemson keep up in a game that ended up being very high scoring for Ohio State, and then Clemson not having any receivers, really. I mean, you look at the Alabama receiver depth chart, and even without Waddle, which we'll get into here in just a second, the Alabama depth chart still blows the Clemson receiver depth chart out of the water, and they just weren't able to make up that ground that Fields and Sermon dug for the Clemson Tigers. But I mentioned Jalen Waddle, and that's maybe the biggest news headline to come today regarding this game. And this came from Matt Zenitz at AL.com earlier today. Said that wide receiver Jalen Waddle is expected to return to practice with the Tide tomorrow, tomorrow being Tuesday. He said the star receiver has not played since suffering a gruesome ankle injury on October 24th against Tennessee. I believe that was the first kickoff return of the game.
It was.
And a Tennessee defender came down on that ankle in a very awkward way. Zenitz reports that according to his sources, it's too early to tell whether Waddle will be able to play in the national title game, but it is a possibility. Now, last month, this was the last time we heard anything about Waddle prior to today. Nick Saban said that Waddle's rehab was going smoothly. He said the cast had come off. And but other than that, there really hadn't been much talk of Waddle returning this season. So I don't know if it's a bluff and the Tide are maybe just trying to get Ohio State to prepare for one more weapon, but how big of a boon to the Alabama offense would that be to have even a Waddle at 60 or 70% on the other side from tomorrow night's likely Heisman winner, Devontae Smith?
It is huge when you start talking about putting another bullet in the gun for this Alabama offense. And if nothing else, it dresses up great eye candy and makes the defensive coordinator and the defensive players play even closer attention, because Waddle, before he got injured, was the most explosive player in college football. His speed, again, I would take him being in second gear rather than him being in fourth gear anytime, because his speed, second to none. And again, you compare that to the Kenyon Drake effect, to where Alabama has been faced with the same situation. Alabama and Kenyon Drake, a couple of years ago, he comes and you kick to him in the national championship game, and he takes one to the house after coming off an ankle injury against Ole Miss.
That's right.
One of the biggest difference makers in that national championship game against Clemson. Waddle has the same explosive capabilities that he does, and again, maybe even more explosive from a receiving standpoint, because Drake was a running back, and you can put Waddle anywhere you want to on the field, kick return, punt return, again at wide receiver, and I just love the fact that Alabama may have another weapon for that game.
Yeah, and I think it's crucial, especially for this matchup with Ohio State, because we talked about that front seven and how difficult of a time Clemson had running against them, 44 yards carrying for the entire game. So if Ohio State were to replicate their defensive performance against Clemson as closely as possible, and let's say they were able to shut Najee Harris down this coming Monday night to, I don't know, let's say 50 yards. That's certainly far off of Najee Harris's average. And if that's the team total rushing yards, that in itself is not enough to get a win on Monday night. But what Ohio State did, even though their secondary is not necessarily a strength of their team like it has been in years past, they did take the one threat that Clemson had on the outside, and that's Amari Rodgers. And I don't know if they were doubling him or if they were able to lock him up with one guy, but they basically shut him down for the game. You know that they're going to try to do the exact same thing to Devontae Smith. Now, whether that's even possible to shut down Devontae Smith, I don't know. That's a question that'll be answered maybe Monday night. But just by having Waddle on the other side and maybe having Mechie out there, that's too much for one team to shut down one receiver when you have explosive options like that on the other side. And that's something that Clemson did not have on Friday that really ended up dooming them.
The biggest thing for Alabama is going to continue to be the offensive line play. Losing the rock and your center in Dickerson, that's the biggest thing for Alabama to be able. And I thought that the Alabama's offensive line did a great job protecting Mac Jones, and I thought Mac Jones made a couple of plays to extend the pocket and extend the play to where he was able to spin out of a couple of tackles and make a couple of great throws and check downs as well. But there is not a team in America that one-on-one can check Alabama, whether it is you look at a situation, whether it's Waddle on the outside, Smith on the outside, you have Bolden, then you're talking about tight ends that can catch the football for Alabama, Najee Harris out of the backfield on wheel routes, too many explosive plays. And if the Ohio State defense is able to get to Mac Jones, and let's say he does throw an interception, Mac is in a situation to where he shakes that off and he knows the next play to where he can be explosive. And that's the great thing about Mac Jones. When this offense does struggle, they put it behind him and they find a way on the next possession to get it in gear.
Well, the betting line is, of course, out for Monday night's game. Bama opened as a 7-point favorite. Line since then has gone even further in Alabama's favor. Some books now at 7.5 points and some at 8, with Alabama being the favorite. The over-under opened at 76.5 points. Has been bet down to 75 in some books, but that is the highest point total this entire bowl season, and it's coming Monday night in the national championship game. So Oddsbakers expecting both offenses to show up in a big way. All right, coming back, more Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. We'll talk about the other SEC games.
Breaking down the big games and talking about the big names, you're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night. Dalton Orwig, Corey LeBounty, and Ian Blair with you on this Monday night. 251-343-0106. That's the phone number. You can call or give us a text on that number, and we'll have plenty more to say about Monday night's national championship matchup. And we'll try to get a really good guest on this coming Monday night prior to the game to talk about it as we lead into kickoff 1 week from tonight. But those weren't the only two games that have been played over this past week, and they kind of grouped almost all of the SEC games together there in one weekend. And let's start with the Auburn Tigers, and I'm going to call it a blowout loss, even though it was really only two touchdowns. But Auburn losing to Northwestern 35-19. Of course, Malzahn out, so interim head coach Kevin Steele had the lead on Friday when that game was played, and drops Auburn's record to 6-5 for this season. But all of that's in the past now. A new era has officially begun as former Boise State head coach Brian Harsin takes over on the Plains. And the big miss for Auburn on Friday was, of course, running back Tank Bigsby not playing. And we've seen that a couple times this season. I don't remember exactly how many games Tank was out for, but the 2020 Auburn football team without Tank Bigsby is just not a competitive team in any form or fashion. And it's strange in college to say that one player can have that much of an effect on a team's offense. But without him in the game, they become like the Florida Gators run offense without Kadarius Toney running sweeps out of the backfield. They had no run game without Tank Bigsby in the game. And Bo Nix, you know, is as much as people wanted him to be the next big thing and maybe one of the greatest Auburn quarterbacks ever, he's shown now in his first 2 years, maybe things will change. I don't like the odds, but he just doesn't have the ability or right now the weapons to carry them on his own. So no Tank Bigsby ended up being just a massive loss for Auburn against Northwestern.
Auburn with 61 total rushing yards against Northwestern, and that's just not going to get it done, Dalton.
No.
Even if you do have Tank Bigsby, you need somebody to come over the 100-yard rushing mark. And then receiving-wise, when you have your best wide receiver, Seth Williams, the yardage, 72 yards on 5 reception, is not that bad. But you just need somebody else to step up to the plate. And this season, Auburn finishes 6-5, a disappointing 6-5. But all the turmoil that they went through, I wasn't surprised that they dropped this bowl game.
You know, looking ahead to next year as Harsin officially takes over, I think the one thing Auburn needs more than anything, other than some reserves for Tank Bigsby, because Bigsby did announce, I think, earlier today, it looks like he's coming back to Auburn. Seth Williams, on the other hand, heading off to the NFL draft. That's how things look right now. But they have to have some sort of competition for that quarterback one job, at least to push Bo Nix in some form or fashion. Backup quarterback Cord Sandberg announced that he's transferring from Auburn, but he clearly wasn't much of a threat to Nix's job this season. I looked around. According to Auburn Undercover, Bowling Green transfer Grant Loy, he was the backup this year. He might return next season. He doesn't really sound like a difference maker in the SEC. Shyle Garnett was a three-star signee this past season. He was on the roster. Not sure what they think about his prospects. But I think the best hope right now for Auburn fans rests on the shoulders of incoming four-star freshman Demetrius Davis. Now, from what I've read about this kid, winningest quarterback in Texas high school history and more of a threat running the ball than Nix has been, could he possibly be the guy to raise the Tigers' ceiling next year? And don't forget, in this day and age, plenty of time to add a transfer or two, but is it possible, could Nix turn this around, or is it time for Auburn to start either figuring out how to win games using the other positions on the offense and let him be more of a game manager, or is it time for them to find somebody else that can win them some games?
I think that Nix has the inside track, of course, because he has the most games played for the Auburn Tigers at the starting quarterback position. But transfer portal. Auburn's got to find a way to hit a home run to get somebody that Harsin trusts or believes and already knows his system offensively. And if he's able to do that, I think that will make a difference. I think Bo Nix will start the season as the starting quarterback at Auburn. I don't think he'll finish it as the starting quarterback just because I think games played in SEC experience-wise, again, this COVID-19 changed everything in the spring, and having a spring game, if they're able to actually have one, Dalton, will make a huge difference also.
Yeah, I think that'll make a huge difference for a lot of teams. We forget that. We've come so far in the season that how disjointed the lead into the season was and how condensed so many of those practice phases were for so many of these teams, and you know that caused some teams to play much worse than they actually are. Speaking of that, Florida got absolutely trounced by Oklahoma, 55-20. Florida without its top four receivers, including Kadarius Toney and tight end Kyle Pitts. I think they were also down several other starters on the defensive side of the ball, but it was what was said after the game that caused the waves in the media headlines. Florida head coach Dan Mullen said the last game the 2020 team played was 11 days ago. He also said they didn't, quote, have to play, but that he thought the Gators scout team did well. I want to say that props to Florida and props to Mullen for getting out there and playing that game. Like he said, they didn't have to play. I thought that was kind of a funny comment that he thought the scout team played well. But what I'm upset with Dan Mullen about, if I were a member of Kyle Trask's family or, say, Kyle Trask's agent as he heads into the NFL here in the next couple of seasons, I guess it'd be after this season, why put him out there? You're without any of your offensive weapons for the most part. If your job as a coach, there's a lot of jobs as an SEC head coach. First is winning games in the conference, trying to get to the national championship when you're the Florida head coach. But part of that and part of recruiting means putting your guys in the best position to succeed and the best position to get drafted and go on to actually make money in this game for the rest of their lives. Kyle Trask potentially lost millions of dollars by that poor performance against the Oklahoma Sooners. And really, I blame Dan Mullen more than anyone else for putting him in that position.
I would have liked to see Emory Jones get a lot more snaps a lot faster than he did. Dan Mullen ultimately benches Kyle Trask, and Kyle Trask is going to have to come down here to the Senior Bowl and make that money back, Dalton. Yeah. That's exactly what he's going to have to do. But we saw last night when Philadelphia benches Jalen Hurts that you can go ahead and send him to the bench earlier. I mean, if nothing else, just go ahead and have him on the sidelines coaching Emory Jones up, because this is an opportunity to where, like you said, not coming in, missing 17 players. That really hurt this Florida Gators team. I was glad they played the game. I was disappointed that Trask threw the ball to the other team three times, which is tough, and he controls that, and I think nobody is more disappointed than Kyle Trask, because throughout an entire season, we had seen him shatter records and, again, continue to be a top four Heisman candidate. And there's a reason for that. He just chose to play a poor game without his best players out there. And whether he was checked out mentally or just made bad decisions, he'll have an opportunity to get his money back here at the Senior Bowl. And hopefully he'll do so healthy and have a great week.
A couple other notes from some of the games this past week. That Mississippi State-Tulsa game, yeah, by the way, they did play a game. That was before the, I don't know, 15 or 20 minute brawl that followed the game. That was in Montgomery, right? That was in the
Armed Crampton Forces Bowl.
Okay,
I know.
No, that was over in Fort Worth then. That's right. So they got in the fight in the Armed Forces Bowl, which Army was not playing in the Armed Forces Bowl. And Mississippi State did win the game 28-26. But I think at this point we've all seen that brawl at the end of the game. What I can't get out of my mind is the camera shot that showed Mike Leach in the stands – after the win, taking pictures with fans as his team was in a dogfight out there on the field, an absolute real brawl. Now, I'm thankful that college players have learned to keep your helmet on for the most part during these things. I know I saw a silly player or two take their helmet off, or a couple had it ripped off their heads. But Mike Leach and the ignorance to what was happening around him, and then after that, just he just seemed like he didn't care when he was interviewed about it after. I don't think he's long for this league. And I know a lot of people talk about his air raid, and sure, they had like an impressive week at the very beginning of the season when they upset LSU, who we all learned wasn't the LSU that we've come to know. But Mike Leach, I just don't see the respect that his players have for him, and the way he acted about that entire fight might have bothered me more than the actual brawl between the two teams.
And I think it bothered the president and the athletic director as well, and a lot of alumni, because you're looking at a situation to where now Lane Kiffin has come in, and his job is to own the state of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
And he turns around and he beats you in the Egg Bowl, which is the biggest game for the state of Mississippi and outside of recruiting purposes, and you can't allow that to happen. Now, black eye after black eye for Mississippi State. Nothing seems to have gone right since that initial win after LSU, but for him to be so nonchalant about it, I know he said he needed to take a look at the film and said it was just dumb. Yeah, it was beyond dumb. You just have to have some type of accountability. And throughout the season, you've seen players drop left and right from Mississippi State. So I'm with you. I don't know if Leach, from a talking standpoint, yes, I'm happy that he's in the SEC. From a performance standpoint, I don't know if he's going to be able to stand the test of time.
I agree with you completely. Did we ever find out what caused that entire fight to set off? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was a guy who was in street clothes, just a jersey and a ball cap, who actually punched one of the Tulsa players initially that actually got it started. But there was some coward stuff. Anytime you stomp somebody, you turn around and run, and you hit somebody with a towel, and then you turn around and run. I mean, that's cowardness.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it. I'll say that much.
Yeah, I mean, pay-per-view for sure.
I thought they were showing a replay after the game of the fight. It was the same fight. It had been going on for 10 minutes, 15 minutes. That was absolutely unbelievable that went on as long as it did. You mentioned Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin and how well they've been doing. They did pull off a pretty big win over the second place Big Ten team, Indiana, who was ranked 11th. Ole Miss gets the win 26-20, but it really did not come easy for the Ole Miss Rebels. And I think that all comes back to the new head coach here at South Alabama, Kane Womack, and that Indiana defense absolutely was the only reason that they were in that game against Ole Miss. Kiffin's offense held to 26 points. That's the second lowest total for them this entire year. They only scored 21 in the loss to Arkansas early in the year, and I think that's when Corral threw like six interceptions in one game. But Womack, not to switch topics here, I think he has major potential here for the South Alabama Jaguars, and the staff that he's putting together with him running the defense and Applewhite running the offense, this program will certainly see new heights. Let's see how far those heights will take them.
Reason to be excited if you're a South Alabama team. Again, you're talking about only 13 points at halftime by an Ole Miss offense that's explosive, scores close over 50 on Alabama in the middle of the year. Again, I think that Womack is going to do a wonderful job. His staff that he continues to hire is going to continue to get better, and a lot of excitement around the Jaguar program.
And he's in town now. I saw he tweeted that I think his first stop was Fusackley's to get some Mobile fried chicken. So welcome, Kane Womack, and please, please build a defense like you have in Indiana. Overall, the SEC went 6-2 in bowl games this year, with obviously one game on the way, the national championship. And all six of those wins came against top 25 ranked opponents. So the people that were saying the SEC was dead towards the beginning of this bowl season, that's certainly not the case. They got some big wins.
Sun Belt 4-1, Dalton, and had a couple of top 25 teams. So to me, this was the year of the Fun Belt. If you had to pick a conference that really superseded and definitely shine during COVID, Sun Belt.
All right, let's talk about the 2,000-yard rusher from Tennessee and these wildcard playoff games on the way. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, reading your texts here on the Future Ones text line, 343-0106. Texter here says, please review, when we were talking about Auburn, please review the offensive line signees from this year. That's where it starts. It's going to be ugly for 3 years. Bama, on the other hand, will likely have the best offensive line in the country in 2 years. 2 5-stars and 2 4-stars coming in. What's the name? What are the brothers' names that are coming in for Bama?
Brockenmeyer?
The Brockenmeyer twins. They sound like they should be like making Facebook or something. I don't know. Inventing something that's worth a lot of money. The Brockenmeyer twins. That's who is. They don't need the day saved, but they're going to be a pretty good offensive line tandem for years to come. It looks like. Daniel says Mississippi State should fire Leach and hire Tom Herman. He says that's the Bulldogs' best bet. I don't know about them hiring Tom Herman as the head coach, but my theory here for the newly opened Alabama offensive coordinator position, I know that Adam Gase's name has been tossed around, and Bill O'Brien, that's two names that Feldman said earlier on Twitter. I think Tom Herman, if he wants to rehabilitate his image as a head coach, what better place to do that than Alabama? And you look at his resume as an offensive leader over the last couple of decades, I'm not sure there's a better resume out there for an offensive play caller in college football right now. Why doesn't Nick Saban go take a look at Tom Herman?
I'm not going to rule anything out in regards to Nick Saban and his ability, because money's not going to be an issue. I know it's Black Monday in the NFL for head coaches in regards to them getting the axe, and I think there's maybe 5 or 6 NFL jobs that are now available. And Bill O'Brien, you know, coaching for the Texans, I don't think he would stick and stay. I think he ultimately wants to get back into the NFL as a coach. I want to find some stability somewhere, and I like that Alabama has the success. But, again, as far as Herman coming over, I would not have a problem with that.
Let me tell you, Corey, I feel for you that you just want a little stability with Alabama. I'm sorry. I'm sorry that they haven't been stable enough for you here over these last 10 years, and you want somebody that will stick around. I totally understand where you're coming from as a Tennessee Vols fan. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL, and you're right, it is Black Monday today. Marone gone from Jacksonville. Gase was let go a few days ago. I think there's 5 or 6 positions open in the NFL now, but the regular season came to an end last night with the worst win-or-go-home game of all time, possibly, between Philadelphia and the Washington football team. And Washington ends up winning the NFC East with a 7-9 record. If we have time, let's talk about the coaching malpractice from Doug Peterson taking Jalen Hurts out of the game. But I want to bring up my guy. He used to be your guy. Now he's my guy because he's on the Tennessee Titans. He wears the number 22, and he is without a doubt the baddest man in the game. There might be more athletic guys out there. There might be better football players, but there is no one that is a badder man in the NFL than Derrick Henry. And on Sunday, rushed for 250 yards, 2 touchdowns against the Houston Texans, became the 8th player all-time to rush for 2,000 yards in one season. He's led the league in rushing yards back-to-back seasons. This year alone, I think he rushed for more yards than 23 teams did in the NFL. Houston had no chance of stopping him on Sunday, but Derrick Henry, and he's also the second Tennessee Titan to rush for 2,000 yards after Chris Johnson did just over a decade ago and rushed for 2,006. What do you got to say about your old guy, Derrick Henry?
He's special. I mean, El Tractocito is what his name was in college, and I just see him getting the job done. Congratulations to him being the 8th player in NFL history to be able to do that. And in back-to-back seasons, the way that he's dominated defenses, I knew that he was going to struggle against Green Bay in the snow. My mom and I were watching that game. But, again, when you're talking about the dominant performance that he had yesterday, you're not going to be able to stop him. He's just such smooth, and he's so strong. The stiff arms that he gives are ridiculous. But congratulations to him.
And he doesn't get tired.
No.
The coaches said they have to tell him that he's tired because he just does not believe that he's hurt or tired ever and never wants to come off the field. But the Tennessee Titans will be playing in the wild card playoffs this weekend. And I thought here, with just a few minutes left to go, let's go around the room and pick these wild card playoff games for the NFL this coming week. Now, it's a little bit different this year. 7 teams made it on both sides. Only 1 bye for the top seed in each conference. That went to Kansas City in the AFC and, of course, Green Bay in the NFC. So let's start with that New Orleans matchup. New Orleans, the number 2 seed in the NFC, absolutely crucial for them to avoid outdoor games as long as they can. And they're going to host number 7 seed Chicago Sunday afternoon, 3:30 in the Superdome. A Chicago team that's had a bit of an offensive renaissance. They still have a pretty good defense. Corey, who you like in the New Orleans-Chicago game?
Saints in a close one.
Saints in a close one. Ian, how you feeling about that one?
I'm feeling Saints by a score, and I'm thinking it'll probably go into OT, to be honest with you.
Any word, I haven't checked. I don't know if Michael Thomas will be back for this game. I know they put him on IR to end the regular season.
I hope Kamara comes back.
And Saints fans are hoping that Kamara's off of COVID-19 by then. So that's two crucial plays there, but I think New Orleans wins this one as well. One of the other matchups in the NFC, the NFC West champ Seattle, the number 3 seed, and they're hosting the number 6 seeded LA Rams Saturday afternoon. I'm still thinking no Jared Goff for the Rams with that broken thumb. Who knows, he might be able to play. I'm taking Seattle all the way in this one, and it's a divisional matchup, so it might be tight. I'm going to say Seattle by 10 points.
I'm going to go with Russell Wilson in Seattle as well. I think they're going to win big.
Ian, who you liking that one?
I'm still liking Seattle there. I mean, again, like you said, one, I don't even think Jared Goff's presence on the offense would change the outcome.
Yeah.
It would just be more of a stat padding kind of game for him. Go get your stats, get your numbers up, whatever. But Russell Wilson has made an MVP kind of statement this season, and I have this a 35-7 win in favor of Seattle.
Oh, that's a big blowout. All right, we're all on the same side, maybe differing in how big the wins are. NFC East winner Washington, 7-9. Hosting Tom Brady and the resurgent Tampa Bay Buccaneers offense on Saturday night. For me, this one, not close at all. I know that Washington coming in, they have something to prove, but if you've watched that offense the last few weeks like I have, Alex Smith is a great story, Ron Rivera is a great story. They have nothing going for them except their defense, and the Buccaneers offense way too hot right now.
The great story ends. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, maybe an incentive clause as to more catches for Brown in the postseason. Mm-hmm. The Bucs win it.
Yeah, the Bucs are definitely going to take this one. And again, like I said before, it's going to be a blowout like what Seattle is going to do to the Rams.
All right, Ian calling for two blowouts in the wild card round.
Back to back, man. Let's get it.
All right, AFC, Kansas City with the bye. Buffalo grabbed the second seed. 6,500 Bills fans in the stadium on Saturday afternoon, hosting number 7 seed Indianapolis and future St. Michael's head coach Philip Rivers. Let's start with Ian on this one. Who are you liking in Buffalo and Indianapolis?
I think that the greatness of Josh Allen is going to find a way to put this thing away by the first half. I don't even think Indianapolis's life support will last for 25 minutes.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Another blowout call from Ian?
Another blowout call. This one this one will not be by 28-plus points. I think it'll be more of a 2-3 score game, but it will be over by halftime before we even try to make a daggone game out of this thing.
Well, here's my first upset pick of the year. Indianapolis is going to go into Buffalo. Everyone's talking about Buffalo as the team to challenge the Kansas City Chiefs. I've seen Josh Allen on a bad night. It's been too long since he's had a bad night. He's going to have one on Saturday afternoon. Indianapolis is going to pull out the win against Buffalo.
How long is too long? I was going to say,
it's been about
10
weeks.
I was going to say, how long is too long there, Dalton?
I just have to go with the Bills. They're playing in front of their own fans for the first time all season. I like Philip Rivers in regards to being the next head football coach of St. Michael's, but it's not St. Michael's time yet. Buffalo Bills in a big one.
All right, we finally go opposite ways on that one. The NFC North winning Pittsburgh Steelers hosting number 6 seed Cleveland Sunday night. Second week in a row they'll play, but obviously Big Ben and a number of starters were out for Pittsburgh on Sunday. Corey, who you like in the Pittsburgh-Cleveland matchup?
I'm going to go with the Steelers. I like Mike Tomlin, and I know they struggled and lost 3 in a row there for a while, but if they find the running game, which I think they'll do, I like the Steelers.
All right, Ian?
I am going to actually sway away from that on the dial, and I'm going to pick Cleveland here in an overtime victory by possibly a field goal or a touchdown. Here's why. One, I do not believe that the Steelers, after they had that consistent win streak, have been able to find their identity again since that point. Second, I know that some people are out there scratching their heads going, what? This dude actually picked the underdogs for once? Yes. Yes. But you also have to understand that I think that time is going to catch up in a big way with my man Big Ben, if it hasn't already, and things are just not going to go his way this time.
Yeah, the Steelers' offense has gotten stale. That's one way to put it. Big Ben said he called the plays in the second half of that comeback against Indianapolis. If he calls the plays again this week, Pittsburgh wins. Unfortunately, I think they're leaving it that up to the offensive coordinator again, so I'm going with Cleveland in this one. And we saved my game for last. Number 4 seed Tennessee hosting number 5 seed Baltimore. Titans have won 2 games in a row against the Ravens. My head says Baltimore's going to win. My heart says Tennessee.
I'm going to go with my head and my heart. I got to go with the Ravens, though.
Okay, Ian?
Listen, the greatness of Derrick Henry will always find a way, my friends. always find a way.
All right, so Ian's with me on the Titans. Should be another great week of sports, and we'll recap it and preview the national championship next Monday night. Thanks for listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.